In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And for this specific podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about movies and TV shows.
Oh, just in general. Topic.
Just in general, but specifically stuff that has come out just recently.
Okay, so should we throw out a fair spoiler warning then now before we start having a discussion?
Well, I would say, here's the thing. Most of the stuff has been out for a couple of weeks. But I guess we can say, spoiler, if you have not seen the Hawkeye TV series, which is one of the things I'm going to bring.
I definitely haven't seen it.
If you have, but you have no intention of seeing it because you're not going to get Disney Plus, so the only way that you're ever going to get information is by me giving it to you anyway, right?
Right. Okay. Essentially. I mean, you want to tell me about the Beatles documentary then?
No, because I have no intention of watching that, because I like good music. Anyway, come on, you set that one up. You know that. You
did. Yeah, I know. Purpose, I did. Right? I did. Okay. Asshole.
God damn it. I mean, if I have to watch it, I will. My wife won't watch it with me because she dislikes the Beatles even more than I do. I think the only band she dislikes more than the Beatles are Nirvana, which makes sense.
More than the Beatles?
Yeah, she hates Nirvana more than the Beatles. She hates Nirvana.
Wow.
Like, she'll let a Beatles song play on the radio or like TV or something, but like if a Nirvana song comes on, especially if it smells like Teen Spirit, she will change the station immediately.
Well, I can understand that just from that. I can understand that on the degree of overplay, but like,
no, she flipping hates that song. There's only one Nirvana song that she ever even somewhat liked, and that would be oh damn, I'm not even thinking of it now.
Penny Royalty.
No, the one off of the first main track off of In Utero. I can't think of it now.
I'll have to look it up. I don't remember the name of that one.
It's the video with the lady in the bodysuit and the weird landscapes, and I'm not even thinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's not Heart. Well, the opener is Serve the Servants, but if you're thinking Heart-Shaped Box.
Yes, that's it.
That's the lead single, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first single was Heart-Shaped Box.
Yes. So, sorry, first single on In Utero, not the first song, first single. That's the only one that she kind of a little bit likes, but not, I wouldn't say likes, she tolerates. She prefers a couple of cover versions of that song. There was a Swedish guy who did a cover version of that song that's amazing.
Oh.
Really, really good cover version. Yeah, I think he's Swedish. I'll send you a link to it. It's a really, really good version of the song. But anyway, yeah, she absolutely hates Nirvana. So back to what I was saying, spoilers for Hawkeye. If you haven't seen that, spoilers for the new Matrix, which hopefully everybody saw that at some point or another. HBO Max is at least one of the streaming sites that most people should have. So there will be spoilers for that. If you don't want spoilers for the new Matrix, you'll probably want to stop at some point. We'll let you know when we'll start talking about the new Matrix stuff. The one I haven't seen yet because I haven't gone to a theater because I'm still not sure about going to a theater. And so I'm waiting for it to come onto Disney Plus whenever that does happen is the new Spider-Man. Although I know what happens in the new Spider-Man.
Okay.
Because it's impossible to stay away from the spoilers.
Yeah.
I know what happens. And that's fine. I still want to see it happen, but I'm not necessarily going to talk about that one until I actually do finally see it.
That's fair. So that I will tell you this. I haven't been into the Marvel movies or the MCU myself.
Yeah.
Strictly from the standpoint of, well, there's a couple of things. I have found it very hard for myself to get into really a lot of the Marvel movies. It's partially because of the spoiler territory. Like, you can't go on fucking Facebook for a week after a Marvel movie comes out without getting spoiled with stupid amounts of detail. And now Google feeds start throwing it at you.
You can't. But I will say this. One of the things that I have liked about the Marvel Universe, and that's something I'll talk about with Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've liked about it is the fact that it's doing a really, really good job of following up on the bombastic, ostentatious first couple of movies. Yes, in the sense that you see this is one of the things that I believe that that Zack Snyder was trying to do with the DC cinematic universe, and he because of the tragedy that he suffered, he wasn't able to do that properly with the Justice League movie and continue on doing that with the other movies that he was trying to make. The more modern thing that's happening with these comic book universes is you're seeing the repercussions of what happens in these movies. Like I was watching the non-Roger Corman original Fantastic Four movie, because most people don't know that Roger Corman did do a Fantastic Four movie. It never got any like major release, but he did make a movie while he owned the film rights to it. It was awful. Like really awful, worse than the ones with Jessica Alba and Chris Evans and the dude from The Shield and
Michael Chiklis.
His name.
Why do I know his name?
You should know his name. I can't remember the other dude's name, even though it's a Ioan Griffith. Which it's a weird name because he's Welsh. he is.
That's the only reason why his name is weird, just because he's Welsh.
Well, no, because it's spelled Ioan Griffith, but it's Ioan Griffith.
What the fuck?
Because the way that, or Grufford, or what? It's weird. No, it's spelled Ioan Grufford, and it's spelled Ioan Grufford, but it's pronounced Ioan Griffith because Welsh is weird. Welsh is a really, really weird language.
Yeah, that sounds super fucking confusing, and I don't understand that at all.
It is. It is a really, really confusing language. I was watching the original Fantastic Four movie, and it was funny to see Chris Evans so young and babyface and not, you know, doing this all day long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or doing this all day. But it was fun to see that. But I'm watching it, and one of the complaints about superhero movies is the wanton destruction that happens during the end fights with the villains. So many buildings and roads and stuff get destroyed. And I'm watching this fight with the film version of Doctor Doom, which is just awful. I mean, you don't take an actor whose only main credit at that point was being a demon in Charmed and make him the main villain.
Oh my God, that's all that guy's film credits were at that time?
Not all, but that's like his main thing he was known for. Yeah, was Balthazar in Charmed.
And yeah, I remember seeing him and going, "Who the hell's this guy? Like, who is he?"
He's basically Balthazar in Charmed again as Doctor Doom, and it's just. I think he may have started Nip Tuck already by the time that came out. I don't know exactly when Nip Tuck happened, but
okay.
Still, Julian McMahon, great TV actor, not necessarily suited for film. And he's still on TV doing great work. Stay in your lane. There's certain things that you're good at. Stick with those things. You know what I mean?
This is like that time they got George Clooney for Batman.
Yeah, stay in your lane, man. Stay in your lane. And even Clooney knows now I'm going to stay in my lane.
I love how he's so open about how he knows he ruined the Batman role. And he's like, yeah, it was a terrible fucking choice. I took it because money, but it was a terrible choice.
Chris O'Donnell, you see, he's still working in TV. It's in your lane. You do not need to be Robin ever again.
I don't think Chris O'Donnell was a particularly bad Robin. I just think he had bad, I blame Schumacher more than anybody.
Schumacher deserves blame more than anybody. There's certain things that Schumacher needs to do and certain things that Schumacher needs to not do.
Yeah.
It's just, again, stay in your lane.
Know
the thing that you need to do and do that thing the way that you need to do that thing. It's like, I can't even think of the guy's name now. One of the producers for Independence Day, and he's been making movies now. It's not, it's, not Roland Emmerich, but he's making a new movie about something about the moon, right?
Something about what? Sorry, you cut out real quick. What was that?
Something about the moon. And he's okay. The guy that did 2012.
Oh, God. When they thought that the end of the world came, or what's supposed to.
I'm trying to find his name real quick. And my phone search is not wanting to work with me. Stupid phone search. But anyway, there's some people just, you have certain things that you do in movies and your work that you do, you know, you have these things you do, stick with those things. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is Roland Emmerich. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there are just some people. Roland Emmerich is going to destroy everything that he possibly can when he makes a movie. That's just to who he is.
Yeah.
Everything is going to get destroyed. He wants to destroy the earth in his brain somewhere. And so he makes Independence Day. Everything gets blowed up. I believe he made the Godzilla, the Matthew Broderick Godzilla. Everything gets destroyed.
Everything gets blowed up. Yep.
I mean, that's just, to some people just do that. I mean, Steven Spielberg makes a movie, somebody's a bad dad.
Oh,
that's
God.
Just the way it works. Somebody's a bad dad. Because Steven Spielberg always, there's always daddy issues in his movie. Always. That's just,
I'm trying happened. To go through it out and think about when. Oh my God, you're right.
I know I'm right.
Holy shit. Yeah, that was like one of the major plot points of Crystal Skull. And that's the worst example.
No, that's like all of the Indiana Jones movies is
yeah,
is
it includes his shitty father.
Is about his dad being a problem for him.
Well, yeah, but then they twist it in Crystal Skull. He's a shitty father. He has a kid he didn't even fucking know about, and he's having a hard time adjusting to the fact that he has a kid.
Either shitty fathers or absent fathers. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean,
I never thought about that.
Hook.
Oh my God, Hook.
Seriously, Spielberg. That is one of the Jurassic Park. I mean, that is one of the hallmarks of a Steven Spielberg movie is there's got to be a shitty dad in the movie.
What did your dad do to you, Steve?
I don't. I mean, I don't know, but that's a thing with all of Steven Spielberg movies.
Wow,
that's just the way he makes his movies.
Oh my goodness, so I never thought about that. I never realized that until you mentioned. Now I got to go through like the plot points of like all of his movies.
I mean, there's camera shots. There's camera shots that people use over and over again. There's a specific camera shot that like Stanley Kubrick used. So when Steven Spielberg finished a Stanley Kubrick movie, he included a Stanley Kubrick camera shot in it. But then he also included the side mirror of a vehicle camera shot, most famous in Jurassic Park,
uh-huh.
But used in many different Spielberg movies. He had that shot in the film. Plus he had the hallway tracking shot that Kubrick used to use in films. It's most well known from Full Metal Jacket. That's a specific shot that Kubrick would do on multiple films.
Oh my God.
And so it's just, it's each of these filmmakers, creators, actors, they all have their specific things that they do, and just do what you're supposed to do. Stay in your lane with stuff. I mean, you can, if you want to get out of it occasionally, sometimes when you do, it's great. For the most part, stay where you need to.
Oh my gosh. That's fantastic.
But anyway,
that's fantastic. I can
film history for people. it's one of those things that
working title for the episode so far, Spielberg's daddy issues.
No, that's a whole episode in and of itself. But anyway, as I was trying to say, what was I trying to say? Oh yes, back to the original discussion, which was the repercussions of superhero movies, of destruction. So I'm watching this Fantastic Four movie, and all this is being destroyed. You know, the Human Torch is circling Dr. Doom and creating the whole supernova effect, and he burns this whole circle. Area of the asphalt to where it's all melty, and there's a bunch of vehicles destroyed, a bus destroyed, a garbage truck, stuff all, you know, messed up all over the place. And like, okay, one of the arguments always happened with the superhero movies, you have these big fights and all this stuff gets destroyed. Who pays for that crap? Who takes care of that crap? Who cleans all that up? Isn't the public going to get tired of superheroes at some point when every time something happens?
Yeah, right?
Crap just gets destroyed. Now that's been addressed in the comic books in that there are comics about a company that goes around and cleans up after superhero fights.
Yes.
Literal comics about this.
Yeah.
And they've been introduced into the MCU movies. And this is what Zack Snyder, I think, was trying to do with the Batman versus Superman and the Justice League movies, was to show the after effects of what happens when these superheroes do these things.
Oh yeah, that was a huge thing with Dawn of Justice. That was a big part of the Batman story arc in general. He held a grudge against him because he was so fucking destructive in what he because it's like, Jesus, how many people are dying while you're fighting a dude who, he wants to take over the planet, but how many people are dying in your wake, man? Like, Wayne Tower went down. That was the big thing.
That's the thing is, after the first two Avengers movies, where in the first one, most of New York is destroyed from the Chitauri invasion, and the second one, the entire... a good part of the country, Sokovia, is destroyed. You have following those two movies and the big bombastic stuff that was going on. Mm-hmm. Many of the plots of the rest of the movies and the subsequent TV shows are the public having issue with, great, we have superheroes, but is it worth the cost of having superheroes with all the shit that happens because of superheroes? And you see the fallout from everything that happens.
You know what?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're touching on something, and I know that you're going to mention this. I'm assuming this is a major part of the Hawkeye storyline in the series. I love it. And I'm curious if the concentration on it is, if there's anybody that was tied to Daredevil. That was honestly one of my favorite parts of see MCU, most MCU stuff. Oh. I did watch Daredevil. And let me get my point out. My point is that is a major plot point of the beginning of the first season of Daredevil and what was done with it. Spoiler warning for Daredevil. I'm just going to say okay?
It's the fallout from the Battle of New York.
It's the fallout from the Battle of New York in the first Avengers movie, and most of it, pretty much all of it, takes place in Hell's Kitchen. But the big deal about it is that's where Wilson Fisk and the Kingpin, who is one and the same, obviously, that's where Wilson Fisk comes in and runs his Kingpin and runs the drug front. He's running a drug front underneath basically a real estate repair construction company.
Uh-huh.
That's the big thing about it. I loved that part of it. And I am familiar with what you may be saying next. But please continue.
Well, that's the thing is, not only are we seeing still the what's happened because of the fall of the Battle of New York and Sokovia, but in some of the newer stuff, in the newer series, we're now dealing with the fallout of the blip, when Thanos snapped his fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And so WandaVision is fallout from the blip. Loki is fallout from, at least Loki supposedly dying, and then the events of Avengers Endgame. Loki in one universe, or at least in one timeline, is able to get the Tesseract and escape, but then becomes a variant, a time variant, and then there's a whole bit about Sacred Timeline and Multiverse, and that series had a lot, and introduced the next new big villain, Kang the Conqueror.
Oh wow,
which was amazing to have that introduced.
Okay.
And then put Owen Wilson into the MCU, which is awesome. It really is. He's actually really, really good he's really good, almost perfect for it. And it also gave us Alligator Loki, which who doesn't want?
Wait, what? Wait, say that again. You cut out. It gave us what?
An alligator Loki.
Okay.
Alligator Loki.
I mean, if you can have horse Thor, why not?
Yes, there's an alligator Loki, and it's amazing. He's hilarious. He bites off another Loki's hand.
Oh my god, that's funny.
There's literally a battle of Lokis at one point.
There's there's multiple variants of Loki then, obviously, through these multiple universes.
There's like 30 or 40 in one room at one point. and only a few of them are actually played by Hiddleston. Others of them look different.
Oh,
and Hiddleston has become a part of a group of about four or five of them, one of which is played by Richard Grant, like British actor Richard Grant.
Who's Richard Grant? I'm not familiar with Richard Grant. Oh, God.
I would reference Spice World if you knew that movie well enough. So I'm going to reference I'll reference Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, okay.
He's the doctor in charge of the mental institution. That Ren
Oh, wow.
Yes, he's also in the Warlock movies, like the Julian Sands Warlock movies. The first one, anyway. He's the Warlock Hunter in the first Warlock movie.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But he's had a bunch of different roles. He's been on Doctor Who. He's been on a bunch of different things. Great British actor. He plays old Loki in like a Lycra, a yellow and green Lycra bodysuit. And
he, whoa, wait, obviously you with the horns he's, and all
he's hilarious, so good as an older variant of Loki. Yes, horns and all.
It's the comic variant of Loki. Yes. Older. Oh yes. My god, that's fantastic. Yes.
But one of the Loki variants Hiddleston is playing is the one that actually gets his hand bitten off by the alligator Loki. He pisses off the alligator Loki and it just latches onto his hand and bites his hand clean off.
Oh my god.
Screaming like a little girl. It's a great scene. But anyway, these shows are doing a really good job of having the shows and the movies. I mean, Spider-Man, his whole trajectory is based on, in the first Spider-Man movie of the new Spider-Man, his whole trajectory is based on his villain is Michael Keaton as the Vulture, who starts the movie being part of cleanup crew after the Battle of New York. And again, as you're saying, you have Daredevil and you have there was Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, all of them kind of interconnected together. Iron Fist and then the Defenders, they all interconnected together after after this time in New York, after the Battle of New York and the subsequent things that would happen. Mm-hmm. And you see the stress that everybody is put under. You see how it wears them down. You see, for instance, injuries. In the Spider-Man movie, the first Spider-Man movie, it happened directly after Civil War, mm-hmm. because Spider-Man's involved in the big airport scene in Civil War. Yeah. And when you do see Tony Stark in that movie, he's not able to use his right arm very well. He's injured. And that injury is from Civil War. You see these people getting injured and it actually taking a toll on them. And you get to the Hawkeye series. And Worth, by the way, you just trying to find the Captain, the Steve Rogers, the musical, sequence, because it opens up with Hawkeye with his kids watching Steve Rogers, the musical, where they're doing a musical number about the Battle of New York. And oh my God, it's hilarious.
Okay.
It is so, so funny. It's just the cheesiest, worst version of a Broadway musical version of something. You're just almost watching through your fingers because it's so embarrassing. But it's like you can't not watch it. I mean, it's the greatest thing. You have people in Chitauri masks dancing around and crap.
Oh my god! I mean,
it's so funny. People on harnesses. The guy who's Iron Man, he's wearing just a hooded sweatshirt and he's on a harness flying around and crap. It's so great. It's so great. There and this family's watching that. Well, you find out Hawkeye now has as it happened in the comics, he's now almost completely deaf. He has to wear a hearing aid because of all of the concussive blasts he's been around.
Yeah.
He has hearing damage. His body is beat all to hell. And you see some of the upside. He's in New York and he's at a restaurant and the people and the waiters at the restaurant recognize who he is. So he doesn't have to pay for his meal with his family. He's sitting there eating with his family. Like, no, you don't have to pay for it. You saved our city. So you see like the upside of it, but you also see the downsides of it. He goes and visits one of the memorials at one point. He is at that point still dealing with the death of Natasha Romanoff.
Oh, that's right.
Which again, spoiler, if you haven't seen Endgame, Black Widow dies. Come on, people.
Yeah.
We know from the end of Black Widow that Black Widow's sister believes that he's responsible for her death. So at some point she's going to come after him.
Right.
And then he's also having to deal with the whole plot of Hawkeye is dealing with the Ronin suit, the Ronin character that he was during the blip.
Right.
When his family disappeared and he went on basically a killing spree. And he did. He went on a killing spree. The Ronin, he stopped being Ronin once he was brought back into by Natasha into the time heist to, you know, beat Thanos finally. And he retired Ronin. Well, the Ronin suit and sword shows up and it causes a whole deal because there's people that are mad that Ronin went around killing people.
The
entire plot of the Hawkeye series is there's this young girl who's idolized Hawkeye since the Battle of New York, because she actually was living in New York. The Battle of New York destroyed half of her, half of the penthouse place that they were living in, and she saw out her non-existent wall Hawkeye having his stand on the side of the building shooting arrows at everybody, and he inspired her to become an archer, and she's like hero worshipped him ever since. She runs into him as a result, and there's that, that's where the story leads to, is there are people in the criminal underworld that are unhappy about the Ronin because the Ronin killed off a bunch of their people, and they want to put a stop to this.
Okay.
And of course, at some point or another, Black Widow's sister is brought in to try to kill him, and they have to deal with their shit. And you find out who's behind this criminal underworld who's trying to stop the Ronin. Is that the part that you know?
That is the part that I know, yes.
Because the guy behind it is the Kingpin.
Yep.
And yes, it is the Kingpin from Daredevil. And to add on to that, even though I haven't seen, I'll give you one spoiler from the Spider-Man movie. Matt Murdock is Peter Parker's lawyer.
Yes, I did hear about that scene as well. And they just basically give it a quick little mention, and then he's like not in the movie anywhere past it. They're like, who the fuck are you? And then that's it. That's all it is.
So now, are they the same? Are they the same universe's version of Matt Murdock and the Kingpin as what was in the Netflix shows? That's not been confirmed. But those two people are, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio are playing those parts.
Bullshit, man. Okay.
And there is a knockdown, drag out fight scene with the Kingpin.
Really?
The Kingpin may or may not live through the end of the Hawkeye series, but why would you introduce the Kingpin if he's not going to live? But there's a knockdown, drag out fight, and it's not with Hawkeye. It's with Kate Bishop, the girl who becomes the new Hawkeye basically eventually.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she fights the Kingpin.
Isn't he fucking ridiculously strong? Like, he has ridiculous strength, doesn't he?
Yeah,
and he's ruthless almost, as fuck, too. That's
he's
like
almost physically
thing.
Invulnerable.
Yeah.
This is after he gets hit by a car and driven into a department store. He's still, he gets up after being hit by the car. She attacks him. The only way she gets away from him and beats him is by literally exploding an explosive arrow at his feet. And she's able to get away from him. And he still walks away from that afterwards.
Damn.
Because he's the Kingpin.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a hell of a fight scene. Because anybody that knows the Kingpin's like, why are you doing this, little girl? You're going to get your ass kicked.
Right. That's great.
Amazing series. And again, you're dealing with, Hawkeye is dealing with the entire time, all of the fallout of all of these years of doing what he was doing, and especially the years of being with the Avengers. Mm-hmm. It has beat the crap out of him, and he has all the physical failings. He's dealing with the mental issues of having lost his best friend in the world and still trying to maintain some kind of a relationship with his family, especially now that they're back from being blipped out of existence.
So if I may ask, that means that everybody has memories of what happened, when people died, all that kind of stuff. All of that is still there, and then they all come back, essentially.
Yeah. Well, nobody lost the memories. People just, half the population just disappeared. Half of all the living creatures basically just disappeared for 5 years and then came back.
Damn.
And
so it's almost like this inexplicable type thing.
No, it wasn't explicable.
No. It's just this strange, like, awkward, miraculous thing. Now everybody's dealing with the aftermath of, well, shit, what happened? Because it was like a 5-year span that everyone was gone, right?
Well, and again, they deal with that in the Falcon in WandaVision. One of the main characters comes back, and she disappears in a hospital room where she had been waiting. She had been sitting in the hospital with her mother, who was dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
When she blipped, and then she appears right back in the hospital room, and she has to deal with the fact that she's been gone for 5 years. Her mother died 3 years ago.
Oh my God.
And she has to deal with the fact she lost out on those last 2 years of her mother's life because she blipped in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The whole entire plot moving forward with that is when half the population disappeared for 5 years, borders for countries were kind of not thought of anymore because there wasn't enough people. People were moving in between countries and moving to different areas.
The world population got chopped in half. Yeah.
They're just trying to make things work. And suddenly when all these people appear back 5 years later, all these people who had gone across borders and filled in all these areas were suddenly referred to as refugees. And the entire plot of Falcon and the Winter Soldier is these refugees trying to get some kind of help for them instead of just being shuttled off into poverty and homelessness, because for those 5 years, they helped take care of different things. And now that everybody's back, screw all these other people. And so that's, again, you're seeing the fallout from all of the stuff that has happened. They're doing a very, very good job of interconnecting that and making you see that all the action that happens as a result of these stories and these big set pieces and all this stuff exploding and whatever everywhere, it has repercussions. It has consequences. And they have to live with and deal with those consequences.
Oh, okay,
it's not just superheroes living in this great place and it doesn't matter what we do. No, shit happens and it does not make it good. You have people that have been on the run. You have had people that they were just trying to do good and now they're considered just as bad as the villains. And it's great to see that there is that realistic depth to it. It's not just, oh, these people are great heroes and everything's okay and forgiven. No, there's a lot of
aftermath. Okay, I get it. That's actually I'm actually very glad that depth was introduced, like the social conflict and the strain on mental health that would be caused by that type of major event. And then the removal of said major event, but still dealing with the aftermath and the adjustment. That's okay. That's fascinating to me. I didn't know that they were going into that depth.
Well, and then you have it the story arcs between the two main people that started kind of the Marvel universe. You have the story arc of Tony Stark, and you have the story arc of Steve Rogers, and the arcs that the two of them end up taking, uh-huh. and the conflicts that happen in the middle of that arc. Because you have Steve Rogers, who is the guy who was always going to follow the orders, and Tony, who is the guy who is not going to follow the orders, and you have them almost flip-flop when you come to Civil War, where Steve doesn't want some group to control them and the power that they have, because then they can't do what they need to do that's right. They will just do what they're told. They'll just be able to do what they're told to do. And Tony, we need to be able to control this. We need to have rules to control and contain us. They've completely flipped their positions where they originally started, and they end up having and become at conflict with one another. And they end up having to come back around to an understanding of, by the time Endgame happens, an understanding of the balance between having some rule and regulation, but also being able to do what they need to do. And there's story arcs, major ones for those two characters, and they finish that arc in Endgame, which is why you have Tony Stark sacrificing himself and then Steve Rogers going back in time, being able to live his life and growing old. And you have those two characters. They completed amazing story arcs, and you see the growth and the change and the development within those characters. These aren't just one note characters. They get to grow and change, and the events that happen to them are what make the change happen. The change just doesn't happen willy-nilly. Their response to the events that happen to them and what those do make their personalities change and their ways of handling things change. It's great growth. There is depth of story in there. They're not just one-note characters. And to see that, especially Robert Downey Jr., that man should have gotten awards for his portrayal of Tony Stark, because the change that happens over the course of the movies, the character, the way it builds and grows and deals with the conflicts that happen to him and rationalizes all those things, it is an amazing piece of acting. And they throw back to the original Avengers movie where Tony accuses Steve Rogers of you know, saying the only thing that was special about him came out of a bottle, and yet he was able to command Mjolnir because of who he was as a person. He was worthy to wield the power of Thor because of who he was as a person, not because of what came out of that bottle, not because of the serum that he was given.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America, Steve Rogers, he says that Tony's not the guy that's going to sacrifice himself and lay on the wire. Tony sacrifices himself. You see the full growth between them. And it's amazing storytelling. It really is worth the time and effort. And Hawkeye just builds on that even more. And again, reintroduces characters like the Kingpin, that people like you that watch those the Netflix show, Daredevil. These are characters that you wanted involved in the MCU, and they have been brought in. Again, whether they're the exact same ones, we'll see. But they have been brought in, so the story is happening. And hey, that means that maybe we'll get a Spider-Man Daredevil team up. That'd be hilarious. I still want to see a Spider-Man. The best Spider-Man Daredevil team up is the one that was in, not really a team up, but it's the, you know, those text messages between superheroes that they do.
Yeah.
I love the one where Daredevil is fighting Mysterio. And he's just like, yeah, I found him easy. I was able to beat him really simple. Is he wearing like a fishbowl on his head? Yeah, you weren't stopping. No, I heard him where he was talking, and I walked over and beat the crap out of him. It's like, oh, okay. It's like, yeah, illusions don't work on blind people.
It's fantastic.
It's one of my favorite ones. Anyway, we're gonna take a break.
Okay.
So I talked about Hawkeye, which I wanted to talk about. When we come back, we're going to talk about The Matrix. So here's the thing. If you don't want spoilers for The Matrix, if you haven't seen spoilers for The Matrix.
Yeah.
Don't listen to the second half.
Yeah. Don't listen to the second half.
Okay. We'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
Hey, friends. This is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we're back.
All right.
And you know what we're back to?
What are we back to?
We're back to where it all began, in The Matrix. Sorry, I had to.
Yeah, no, well done, well done.
So, again, this is the time we're going to talk about the new Matrix movies.
Yes.
The Matrix movie.
Spoiler warning.
If you do not want to hear about it because you haven't watched it yet and you haven't been paying attention to your social media, fine. Stop listening now.
Yep.
And still like the video and subscribe and click the bell.
Yeah,
and all the things.
Yeah, we'll do that
later.
Now.
Get
us on YouTube. Get to us on YouTube. Yes. Subscribe, all that kind of stuff, please.
Seriously, we need the people on YouTube.
Yes.
Anyway, now we're going to talk about it. Okay, so first of all, the opening of the movie.
Yes.
It opens up basically in a recreation of the scene from the first movie, the first scene from the first movie.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, okay. Well, first of all, there's the audio thing at the beginning of it where there's two people talking and it's the numbers. And I'm like, okay, so this is like how Matrix movie is supposed to start. All right, I'm feeling this.
Yeah.
And then it opens up with the same scene. I'm like, what? And then people watching the scene and I'm like, okay, because I had many theories going into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had many theories about, does this take place before the original movies? Does this take place after? What's going on with this? Where is this happening? And especially because we have Keanu back and we have Carrie Ann back, but we don't have Lawrence back. So, and mm-hmm. we don't have Hugo back. So what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the Trinity stand in, and it's not Carrie Ann Moss, not even like a de-aged Carrie Ann Moss. There's
no
that's not
yeah,
Trinity.
It took a second for me to actually process that because I was like, wait a minute, that's not her. Although it looks really close to her, like whatever they
close.
What the fuck they did. It was like they got somebody really close, but it's not her.
It's close. It's not her. I'm like, okay, did they just purposely get somebody close? But then you also you see the agents coming. The agent that says Agent Smith's lines, because I know what agent I know Agent Smith's lines because I've seen The Matrix more than enough times.
Yeah.
It's a different guy. It's a black guy. That's not Agent Smith. What the hell? It looks a little bit like the guy that's Morpheus in the trailers.
Yeah.
What?
I saw that immediately. I was like, why is Morpheus Agent Smith? And that's the first thing I thought was like, Morpheus is Smith? Where the fuck is this going? And was that before or after they introduced that somebody was watching the situation?
That was after some. It was introduced. You already see Bugs, and you already see. I can't remember the.
Oh, by the way, Bugs, yeah? Fantastic character name, and everything about her was fucking awesome. I loved her as a character.
Yes, amazing.
She was
character.
Fantastic.
You get that. So the scene plays through, and you have the issues that happen in this. And then you get the big reveal that the agent is, he thinks he's Morpheus. Like, how the hell does he think he's Morpheus when he's in the Smith role and he's called Smith? What the hell?
Well, thinks he's Morpheus or Morpheus? Well, no, because what I caught from it originally, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is a training exercise. This is like the first thing I thought was, wait a minute. They're replaying it over. Somebody else is watching this from the outside. This is a training exercise. And then it goes to where
it could be.
Yeah.
It could be a training exercise.
Are we just going to go scene to scene?
it could be a training exercise, but it's not. But, it's still, it's really weird. We're not going to go scene to scene, but it's really weird how that happens. And I love the fact that it starts this way. It does leave you wondering, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Why are we seeing a rehash of the original scene? What is this movie going to do? Is this just, and this leads into what I think is the biggest, most beautiful thing about this movie. Is this just going to be a rehash of the original movies? And that's what's so beautiful about this, is because it leads you to think that. It gets you into that mode of, this is just going to rehash the original movies. And it doesn't. It turns all on its head. And in fact, later in the movie, it completely addresses the fact that by having it so meta, having conflict.
Yeah.
Being that.
That was like the theme of the whole fucking thing, is just meta. Self-reference. Yeah. Self-reference and. And also the idea of trivializing the idea of the Matrix as a reality, yes. As well. Take the fact that everything is, goddamn, we're getting like super super deep into it, but the fact that everything is so, I love how everything is so, it's the fact that it's self-referential. The deal that is struck, the resurrection, quote unquote, that's done, like everything, it tacks itself. I honestly thought, like from the trailers, that this was going to be a prequel, and the fact
that's
that
what I thought,
yeah, the fact that it wasn't was cool, but the fact that this literally was just a reconstruction, where he's trapped directly in that, and all of those parts and pieces of the old Matrix exist, but they're literally just recreations of what already was there.
Well, and I think you're a little abstract there for anybody that hasn't seen it.
I'm getting a little abstract because it's weird. I feel weird about like stating all of this stuff, but essentially, I love the fact that the story is that he's recreated this whole thing. It's also self-aware, and the purpose of dealing with the fact that the Matrix was basically it was. The cover was blown. They just trivialized the blown cover. Like, trivialize it. Make it an experience that everybody shared. And I loved that. I loved that plot point. It was just like, as soon as
as
soon as like 5
game.
Minutes in, I was like, oh, this is fucking brilliant. All right, now I'm in. Let's see where the fuck this goes.
And then the fact that there's a Matrix, basically it's the thing used to keep Thomas Anderson in there now is the fact that his experiences, the memories he has of the Matrix, is a video game that apparently he made, and the studio, which is Warner Brothers Studio, and they reference it in the movie, wants a sequel, and then they have a round table talking about how are we going to make a sequel to this video game, what is the Matrix, what does it need, and everything that they talk about in that round table discussion, because this is a scene in the film, having a discussion about how do we make a sequel to the Matrix game, and they talk about all the things that were put on social media of what a new Matrix movie needs to have. They're talked about in this scene. This is where the whole meta thing really becomes like, Matrix has to have this, and it has to have that, and it has to have this, and this is what it really means, and this is what it's really about. And it's kind of trying to tell everybody, you have no idea really what the Matrix is about. You've analyzed this maybe in the wrong way or too much. This is, and it's laying the groundwork for, this isn't what this movie is going to have.
Right.
And it admittedly, it does have a few slow-mo, almost bullet time sequences, which is one of the things that's like heavily discussed in there. But this movie doesn't give you all the expectations that you're going to have with it. It does turn it on its head. It has amazing changes. The idea that the Morpheus character is actually not just Morpheus, but Morpheus and Smith combined together. The fact that the new version of Zion, which the name of the city is, but the message that comes from that what really happened at the end of the first Matrix was not that humanity was freed, but that a truce was able to happen where humanity go back to. Now this is something you'd have to have watched a lot of the Animatrix stuff to fully kind of get the grip on this. There was a time in the history of the Matrix world where humanity and machines did work together until they didn't anymore, and then all the bad shit happened to lead up to the Matrix.
Yeah.
What happened as a result of what happened in the Matrix movies during that original trilogy is that the truce that was struck between humanity and the machines has allowed humanity and machines that don't want to be a part of the machine world, the machines have gone to work with humanity to better humanity, and they've built the idea that two completely different groups that were at war with each other now have elements that work together and help each other. This is more along the idea of, one of the problems I always had with the Matrix was how much it was us versus them, humanity versus machines. But it was also supposed to be about being inclusive and accepting of people's real self, i.e. the self that they projected into the Matrix, which was their real mental self, and then their physical, their actual physical self. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is about being able to accept his physical, you know, Neo's physical body was still, you know, the physical body of somebody who probably would have been Thomas Anderson, but he was Neo. That's who he was. That's who is real. And that's what he was going to be called, was Neo. The idea that, the character of Switch in the first
Matrix,
the fact that your mental image of yourself, the actual part of you that exists in the Matrix may be similar, but not exactly the same as what your physical appearance is. But that mental part of you is what's the true you. And the idea that we're supposed to be accepting of that, but machines are just completely evil. You see a little bit of that added in throughout the Matrix movies, especially with the, in the last Matrix movie of the original trilogy, where Neo is stuck in the train station. And he meets the two programs that have a child who's also a program, and realizes he has that realization already, leads him to go to the machine city and try to strike a deal with the machines. He realizes that the machines just aren't all evil. Machines are still living things.
Yeah.
They don't live, they don't have the physical bodies necessarily always that we have, but the thing that they accept as a living thing, this thinking mentality, which is what they, again, exist there in the Matrix, that is the version of themselves. These machines have a thinking mentality too, so they are living things. And he gets that little bit of insight with that.
Yeah.
With those that family that he sees. He sees a family of machines. They have a family just like, you know, we want to have families. So they're living things too.
Right. Exactly.
He gets that moment of insight. And that's what leads into this new movie is, the people, the humans, are working in the real world, not in the world of the Matrix, not in that digital world, but in the real world. They are working with the with machines that don't want to be a part of the machine world. They've worked out ways to give the machines a way to, even though the machines are just a program that would only exist in a digital realm, they've given them the ability to have physical embodiment, bodies to work with, and they are bettering each other and working together in harmony.
Yep.
And this is what his sacrifice didn't free all of humanity. What his sacrifice did was actually more free some machines to work better with humanity. And we see the inclusiveness, and it's good to see. It's good to see what exactly came from what he did, and good to see that there's still those within the machine world that are just like awful human beings that don't care about what they do to others. They just want their own profit and their own. We have those people that exist and own, you know, all the major companies in this country. You know, we have those people that don't care about the population, just care about what it's doing for them. That's what the analyst represents. It's lovely to see Neil Patrick Harris play kind of a douchey guy. He does do it well.
He does. Yeah, he does that really well. I will say one of the things that I did notice very, very prominently when I watched it the first time that I absolutely loved was the change in color palette, but the amount of blue every time he shows up in the analyst's office. When he goes back to the, he flashes out, and I love it because you see he's about to do something and then hard reset. It was like system reset. That's exactly what happened. You're watching it happen in real time. He's back in the room. He's resetting he's reassociating because he's disassociated a little bit. When he shows back up after the hard reset, he gets coached into reassociating, and he's in a room, and it's all fucking blue. The whole thing. His glasses frames are blue. His shirt's blue. The cat. Deja vu the cat. Fantastic reference to all of these major staples. But the reason why the room is blue is because he is trying to psychologically bring him back into the Matrix and not question himself, question his awareness and bring him back into that. I loved it. Like every time there was a huge grin on my face the first time I noticed it. And every time back in the office, oh, look, it's all blue. He's trying to convince him to come back. That's what he's doing. And it's all done through visual storytelling. Fucking fantastic.
It's amazingly done. And the premise here is, yes, Neo and Trinity did die at the end of the original trilogy. And yes, they were resurrected. And their purpose for being resurrected was to basically be kind of the center of this new version of the Matrix that this character, Neil Patrick Harris's character, the analyst, has created, this new program of the Matrix, where he's realized that doing something specific with two of them, not just one of them, like was mistaken in the past that the one was what's important, but actually doing something with the two of them was able to create something different within the Matrix. And he had to do it a certain way, tried multiple versions, but what he needed to do was actually literally resurrect them, remake their bodies and bring them back to life, which he was able to do.
Yeah.
And they are the centerpiece of this new version of the Matrix, the two of them together. And I love that duality. I love that idea that it is necessary for both male and female half, because it is very much, in the original trilogy, it's very much read out as it's all about Neo. It's all about this male savior again. I love the idea that
I love how they retconned that part of it, but they still were able to, they retconned that part of the idea of Neo himself and him only being that savior. And they turned it into the codependency of the two of them.
Which
without removing anything from the previous stories, it helps them all make sense as well.
No, and it shows why the thing about this is this may be why you don't see more movies, and why they don't need another version of the necessarily. The one was only able to do so much, but the two of them together, that solves the problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And to see the growth and development of that. But then the little Easter eggs, the little tiny hidden things like you talked about with there's lines that you hear given by the Agent Smith, by the way, is back.
Yes.
Played by a different actor, Jonathan Groff, doing a fantastic job with the character.
Oh, yes.
And you see some lines from him that are reminiscent, and he does those lines. Doing a somewhat imitation of Hugo, but not quite an imitation of Hugo. It's great.
Yeah.
There are also some other color Easter eggs. I don't know if you noticed. For instance, you were talking very much about when he's in the analyst's house doing his meeting the analyst's house, doing like therapy sessions to try to get him rebooted back into the this mental program, because he keeps straying from the mental program that is being worked through this matrix. There's a shot at one point, again, you only saw it once. There's a shot at one point where they're looking out of his windows, and typically you see city outside of his windows because his house, whatever, is at the edge of the city.
Right.
But there's actually one shot where one of the windows, you see a mountain in the background.
Whoa.
And it's purposefully like, oh, there was a glitch.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that.
Did you catch the reflections?
The reflections where?
At one point when Neo's finally reached by Bugs and her crew.
Yes.
Back in the Matrix.
Yes.
They show him a mirror, and they show him the reflection of the reason why they couldn't find him.
Because of what he looks like. Yeah.
He does not look like Neo to anybody else looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like some older guy that's balding. And by the way, the guy who's the mirror double for him.
Yeah.
Is actually Carrie Ann Moss's real husband in real life.
No way. That's awesome.
Oh, it gets better. But there are actually at least three instances before that happens, before he has that mirror moment and sees the old guy, the old balding guy in the mirror. There are three instances where reflections of him, you see that old guy. One time in his house.
You know, yeah, one time, I was one catching
time
that.
One time in the computer screen at his office, and one time in the coffee house, at the coffee house we went to, one time in the table of coffee house.
Yeah, I did see that. I was starting to catch that a little bit then. And so they like really define it. But yeah, I did see
that's at least three times that I know of that it happened. It may have happened.
Yeah.
There's also a reflection in the coffee house table of who Trinity looks like in that world. And she's a blonde. She doesn't look like Trinity. He's the only one that sees her like that.
Hmm.
Which is why the conversation where she thinks that the character in the game, the character of Trinity in the game looks like her, and her husband finds that amusing. That conversation has purpose, because to everybody else, she looks like the blonde that you see for a moment in the reflection of the table. She doesn't look like Trinity.
Oh, wow.
But to her, she sees her true self, which is Trinity. So to her, the character in the game looks exactly like her. The game being, of course, the entire events of the original three Matrix movies have been by this new analyst guy who's running this new version of the Matrix, made to believe it's just this video game that Thomas Anderson, Neo's character, created.
Right.
So amazing little bits like that. And of course, there's the fight sequence where the Merovingian does come back, and it is Lambert Wilson.
Yes. Okay. It was really funny because I started watching it just out of a fluke, because my wife was asleep. It was on Sunday. And she likes to sleep in on the weekends. And so I was getting up. I was up and about. And I had really wanted to see it. And so she comes in, but it's like, God, it's like a half hour into the film when she finally wakes up. And so I gave her a quick synopsis, and I'm like, okay, go. And then that fight scene where the Merovingian comes back as a homeless guy, I about lost my shit. I was like, holy shit, that's him. She's like, what are you talking about? I was like, that's the Merovingian from the second film. And she's like, who? I was like, the weird French guy?
Yeah.
That guy. That's actually him. They got the actor back because his role in the new Matrix was ruined. It wasn't the same. It was part of the hard reset. Yeah. And so I was like, of course he's going to have nothing. And in order for him to... And what would they turn him into? They would turn him into a crazy homeless guy, because what would happen if he tried to talk about anything? Nobody would fucking believe him.
Exactly.
It's the whole Simpsons thing where, do you ever see that episode where Homer meets up with the aliens and what they do before?
No.
It's a Halloween episode where Homer is taken up in an alien spaceship, and he finds out that the aliens, you know, the big one-eyed guys with the glass bowl heads and stuff, those guys are planning on taking over and eating the human population, but they're doing it by disguising themselves as Clinton Dole. And so they were, it was a Treehouse of Horror that happened during an election year. And so they told him the entire plot. And then before they set him back down, they sprayed him with rum so no one would believe his story. And they launch him back to Earth.
That's basically, yeah, it's basically what happens to the Norwegian unit. He's the crazy homeless guy that talks about how, you know, 5G is you know, in your brain and whatnot, and the shots have that's our family members nowadays. That's not the crazy homeless guy.
But yeah, I really liked that they put that in there, but it's a visual plot point that if you just have to be a little observant to get it. Like, and there's a lot of that kind of stuff in this film. It's very well thought out, but at the same time, if you've seen the other movies, you totally get what they're doing.
The thing is, again, it flips on its head what we expect from all of these reboots and sequels, the cycle of these things that we are looking for. It's funny because it does the fan service at different points in time, and yet it flips the way it does the fan service. It doesn't do it in the way that you expect.
Yeah.
There's that moment where somebody asks Neo, well, can you fly yet? And he goes and kind of jumps somewhat in the air and lands. He does the whole pounding at the ground thing to try to start the thing, and then tries to jump and then just lands. He's like, no. And it's like, that's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, that's deadpan really Keanu funny. Reeves that he can do. Yeah.
it's really funny. And you're waiting for some of the different things to happen in the fights, and the fights are all Matrix-esque fights, but mm-hmm. and even Neo-esque fights, but you don't see there's no flying around fighting. There's stuff that happens that you're expecting something to happen, and it doesn't happen the way that you expect it.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I absolutely love that.
It's still getting the fan service, but not just being repetitive. It is still unique. It's still its own thing, and the moments in it, you get to the end and it's fulfilling at the end. It gives you an ending that is in some ways better than the ending that you got from the original Matrix. And that's really because of the fact that you have, with the ending of the first one, with those two characters dying, the two main characters dying.
Yeah.
You don't have any possibility of thinking, you can think of what's next for everybody else.
Right.
For Zion, for that. But you don't have anything of what's next they just had the sacrifice, you know,
mm-hmm.
Trinity sacrificed, Neo is sacrificed. That's it. Now you have the possibility, because spoiler, they live through it. Neo and Trinity both live through this new movie.
Yes.
And you have the possibility to see what's going to happen. You know, and the thing is, there's no talk about making any more movies. But the idea that the possibility exists for them, that they were able to save and change the world without having to sacrifice their lives for it, and to have some kind of a life balance.
Yeah. Well, I also what I wanted to touch on actually in the middle of this was the fact that touching on something you were saying earlier about the belief, the idea that Neo is the one, he's the only one who could do this, he's the only one who's supposed to bring about the prophecy that the Matrix will be ended and blah, 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 right? Like, cool little sidebar, and that was good. But my favorite part about it, honestly, was the fact that that it didn't come down to just him, and it didn't come down to just her either. Like, big twist of and this was, like, they marketed the hell out of this, like how Trinity was supposed to die in the previews. They market the hell out of this. The dream thing where she says, I've been having dreams about this moment over and over, and my dream ends here. And they were sitting on the roof with the helicopter and all that kind of stuff coming at them. And the scene where they jump, where both of them jump.
Yeah.
And all they have is belief and faith, and that is it. That's all they've got. And Neo, throughout the whole film, has just been really trying to figure out why he feels so out of place, why he is so suppressed, and what is going on with him, and why can't he do these things? Why do I not have my power? Why don't I have what I was told I was supposed to have? And it turns out in that moment, when they jump off the building and they're supposed to be falling and they stop, but you watch Neo drop and Trinity not. And it turns out that rather than the fact that it was one or the other. It was the fact that it was one's belief in the other one that made the whole thing happen. She's the one who starts flying. She's the one who starts kicking the shit out of people.
That's because in this movie, he believes in her, whereas in the previous movies, she believed in him.
Exactly. And I loved the fact that that was an untouched point in the previous films, because I don't even think it was particularly considered at that point, unless it was, and they just weren't able to sum it up properly. Who knows?
Well,
film companies get involved in a bunch of shit.
No, if you think about it, it was her belief in him at the beginning or at the end of the first film. Her belief in him is what brings him back to life when he's shot and killed by the agents, and that's when he is able to start doing his full thing. And he has the dreams of her dying and saves her life at the end of the second film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still about her belief in him, and it is the moment of him believing in her. And I think this again. This maybe speaks to a change that we've maybe had in our society, in the idea that, you know, we've had a male-centric, male-driven society, and, you know, believing the man is part of things, whatever. This is about the idea of, again, he believes in her, and she's able to fly. You believe in and support him, he can fly. You believe in and support her, she can fly. And then, of course, at the very, very end, they both can fly. And why? Because they both believe in each other.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is.
That's kind of, again, for me, the balance in that, the fact of having that balance of the believing in each other, giving each other the ability to fly and do things, taking that to your real life and the way that we have our relationships that we have. And it doesn't have to be male, female. It can be any relationships that we have, believing in each other. Giving each other the ability to have somebody that has faith in you, you can accomplish what you need to.
Mm-hmm.
You can do what you need to. You can fly, and that has to do with again that belief, that faith, that understanding of the other person, and that willingness to be behind them and supporting them in what they're doing, and put your fate sometimes in their hands.
Yeah,
and that's, you know. Beautiful, even better message, I believe, than the original. Still think it's a good thing to watch all four of them, because that message, it can show the build of the message and the change of the message, the change of understanding how we saw the world one way and we have been enlightened to be able to see it a whole different way. And, the one Wachowski that did come back to make this movie and that made it as part of her journey through the death of her parents and her friend. That makes, with all the experiences that she's had throughout her life, I can see that the ideas behind this, the mentality behind what message this movie wants to send. And it's fantastic. I'm of the belief, probably I will say for me, probably the best of the Matrix movies. And that's saying something, because for me, the first one was always the best. This one I feel is even better. And it does what it needs to honor the original trilogy and yet make itself its own separate thing and an appropriate completion to the entire Matrix universe. Do they need to make more? No. Do I think they need to make this one? Before I said I didn't think this was necessary, I thought it was only something that was for, the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, though, I think it's necessary, because I think it does something to the original story. It adds a depth and a character to the original story that it may have been lacking.
Yes, I absolutely fully agree with that. I think that this, the lack of satisfaction that I had with the, I honestly had a lack of satisfaction with the third film. I liked the first one extremely. I absolutely love the first one. The second one I really liked too. It felt very Empire to me. The what the fuck happens now kind of ending. I loved that.
Yeah.
But the problem was the third one just felt so ham-handed. It felt so slapped together to me that I was very dissatisfied, but only with the third one. I know a lot of people that hated both the second and third.
No, the second one has its moments that I do like, but I agree. The third one is the one that is the most problematic. And you get your normal male savior. situation. White male savior comes and saves the day and makes everything great.
That was a big problem that I had with that one too. It's just like, well, it seems the same as any other fucking film. It made it so
it's supposed to be revolutionary. It made it so
average. Yeah. That's what it was. The ending was so average in the middle of such a revolutionary film series.
Especially when it came to identity and what really is your identity and who really are you? And the fact that's, you know, being discussed, especially during that time period, late 90s, early 2000s, where there was still so much of identity not being fully understood, not being fully seen, and none of the more acceptance of the differences in people that we come to accept more nowadays, still fighting against, but are far more acceptable nowadays. We're talking, this is still the time where you don't have characters that are LGBTQ on any TV shows. They're very rarely set up in movies, and if so, there's always something weird and unique about them that's not like just a normal thing,
right?
And so that's this movie these movies deal with that to some extent, but you still end up having, you know, classic white dude saves the day.
Right.
And does so in Jesus Christ pose. Oh, great.
Right.
And that really, this really goes to show that, no, that's not what the fact that the machines realize, yeah, that's how we've been playing it. But like, that only did so much when we did it this way. Oh crap. It gives us way more power output when we do it this way.
Right.
Why? Because they finally realize it's not about random white dudes saving everything. It's about the connection between the faith in each other, the support for each other. That is what is the creation of the power. That is what is driving everything forward. Love drives everything forward. So
yeah,
a better way to end the series for sure. Better, and acknowledging the fact that even the machines understood it. Having a random white guy save the day, that was wrong. That was not the way it should have happened. This is the way it should have happened. And so that's good. That acknowledges it. You acknowledge your errors. You acknowledge when you've made a mistake. Yeah. So there's still more plot points that we didn't completely discuss. Still more things that unveil. Oh, I was going to say there was one other really funny piece. I mentioned the old guy that was in the mirror. That was Carrie Ann Moss's real husband.
Yeah.
The guy that played her, the character Tiffany, the person that she, the life that she was, you know, plopped into and living.
Yeah.
The guy that played Tiffany's husband, Chad, is famous in his own right. He's a film director. He was previously a stuntman.
Oh, really?
The films that he directed were the John Wick films.
Oh, the that's stunts, great.
No, it gets better. The stunts that he is known for, he was Keanu Reeves' stunt double throughout all the Matrix movies.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that's just another layer of that's the Neo stunt double as her husband. That's another layer of meta, putting him into there.
God, there's so much in that film. That's fucking fantastic.
Having him be Tiffany's husband, Chad. That's amazing levels of stuff. So much thought. The depth that I remember seeing this is behind the scenes stuff of the original Matrix movies. And again, one of the Wachowskis talking to, I think Keanu Reeves, talking about, this is such a deep movie. This is a deep moment. You don't realize how deep it is yet, but it's so deep. I heard that, and I was, after watching all the movies, I was like, where's the deep moment here? I don't see the depth. There's like a very little bit of depth, but not much. Where's the real depth? This finally adds all those layers of depth, and it's,
yes,
amazingly done. Amazingly done. So if you haven't watched it, people, get a chance to watch it. Make it part of your Matrix watching. Watch the originals too. Watch the original trilogy and then go to watch this.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in watching the originals before you watch any new ones, just so that you can get your mind in the right headspace. Believe me, it drove my wife completely nuts when the last three major Star Wars movies came out. Right before they'd come out and do a big Star Wars film fest, she was like, seriously, enough damn Star Wars already. Come on. I'd be like, no, you married this. You know. Yeah, she did. Married this.
Now, that's how you experience films, man. When a new one comes out, you have to catch up on the whole thing. And completely understand that.
Oh, yes. And it was actually one of my children who was really the push for us to watch this Matrix movie the day it came out. because he is a huge fan of the Matrix movies, and he absolutely loved it. Very, very excited. So thumbs up from him. That generation at least likes it. I was going to mention the fact that there's a new Star Wars series that just came out, The Book of Boba Fett.
Yes.
It's been three episodes so far. I will say there's been some fun cameos, including cameos. There was a cameo from a character that was in A New Hope. It was not the same actor, because she'd be way too old to play the part now, mm-hmm. because this Book of Boba Fett happens right after Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
So it's only like 3 or 4 years after A New Hope.
Oh, okay.
So she'd be way too old now, because A New Hope came out in 77, so way too much time.
Right.
But there's a character that was in a deleted scene in A New Hope where Luke talks to a Biggs Darklighter who he finds later at the Yavin base.
Right.
There's actually a scene where he talks to Biggs. They see the battle up in the sky, mm-hmm. between the Star Destroyer and the Tantive IV, Princess Leia ship. Which I'm not sure which Star Destroyer he's on. I know it's not his, because his is a super. But anyway, I just know that that's the Tantive IV. He does have a conversation with Biggs Darklighter and a few friends of his. Luke does in the originally shot, but it was cut out of the movie for pacing purposes. Gotcha. That's where he talks about maybe going to the Imperial Academy and becoming a pilot, uh-huh. where Biggs says he's not going to the Imperial Academy, uh-huh. but he's becoming a rebel. What?
Nothing. This is really funny.
Why?
Because I'm sorry. It's because you're giving so much backstory to a cameo.
Well, but it's important for Star Wars fans, because in the Boba Fett, he goes to a cantina at one point, and he beats the crap out of this biker gang who's harassing this couple, and the female of the couple is actually the character that Luke's character was kind of flirting with in this one scene that got deleted.
Okay.
And so it shows that she still lives on Tatooine, and Boba Fett defends her. So there's the connection.
So this is a deleted scene cameo?
Yes.
Like it's a cameo from a deleted scene? Holy shit.
That's how deep Favreau is going with this.
Good grief.
Favreau is digging really, really deep, to the point of having so many references that you really need to know. Like the action takes place around Mos Espa, which was not Mos Eisley was in New Hope. Mos Espa was the city that was used in episode one. That's where Anakin lived, was in Mos Espa. So there's so much being added to, there's so much in there that is little tidbits that fans know, and it's great little tidbits. On top of that, Favreau is writing it, and Favreau is producing it. But do you know who's been directing the episodes?
Who?
Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, shit. Okay, that's actually really fucking cool.
He directed the episode of The Mandalorian where Boba Fett comes back. And it's a great episode.
Okay.
It's a badass episode. Shit. And Boba Fett goes around just kicking ass. Robert Rodriguez has been directing these.
Wow.
And because of that fact, in the most recent episode, the only spoiler I'll give away is in the most recent episode, one of Robert Rodriguez's favorite actors shows up for what will be a prominent role.
Wow.
Danny Trejo is now in the Star Wars
universe. Shut up.
Danny Trejo is in the Star Wars universe.
Oh my God.
What's better is what he's doing, which is just like, seriously, this is what he's doing? Oh my God. Yeah. And I'm not going to reveal that except to you afterwards, because that's part. You want to know what that is? Everybody else, go watch The Book of Boba Fett. It's pretty good so far.
Okay.
The way it's doing backstory is fantastic. Again, doing something that's similar to what we just talked about in The Matrix. It's taking a group that we just saw as pure bad and evil in the original movie and humanizing them.
Yeah.
Even more so than they have been before, because Boba Fett hangs out with the sand people, and the sand people get way humanized. Way humanized. You start feeling really mad that Anakin just went along and killed a bunch of sand people. I get it. He was rescuing his mom, and then his mom died, and he got mad and stuff. He's going to become a bad guy anyway. But the sand people, hey man, not such bad people. Just saying.
Dude, okay. I've got
an understanding.
I'm waiting to hear about the Tarantino cameo. You know it's coming.
It might at some point or another. We'll see. I don't know. If they
he's fucking kill to be in Star Wars.
They should. If they do it, they need to put him under heavy, heavy makeup. Like Joseph Gordon-Levitt made a small cameo in Last Jedi. That's because
apparently I just found out earlier that John Leguizamo is a character in The Mandalorian, I think.
Yes.
And he's like, there's so much makeup you can't fucking tell it's him.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different ones that did cameos in Mandalorian.
Cool.
But so far, yeah, that's, I mean, you're again, people watch Book of Boba Fett just like you've watched Mandalorian. If you haven't watched either one of those, just go back and watch them because you need to, because they're amazing. They are enriching the Star Wars universe, and that is a good thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
Where are people listening to us talk about movies?
Well, if you went through all of this and you need a reminder, go ahead and check us out on thezenialchronicles.com or wherever you get your major podcasts. I listen on Google Podcast, but there are many other places to find us. Also, you can find us where James listens to us, which is on YouTube as well. We are actually search for The Zenial Chronicles on YouTube. Listen to this as a video on YouTube. Get us some plays. That would be great. Thank you so much. And while you're there, make sure that you hit the like button on the video and that you hit the subscribe button next to the like button, because then that subscribes you to our YouTube channel. We want YouTube subs. We are really looking for YouTube subs. We want to get our custom URLs, our first step. That'd be fantastic if you guys could do that. That'd be great. And there's also one more thing that needs to be done. James, what is that?
Click the bell.
That is right. Make sure you click the bell so that you can notify the next podcast or video we come out with on YouTube, because sometimes if we don't have a podcast, we might have a video. Who knows? But yeah, I believe that's it for me. What about you?
That's it for me, other than of course, checking us out on YouTube. Please check out Mike's other two pages on YouTube, because why not? It's all kind of part of the family. Mike's other two pages, one he does with his wife called Chronosode Games. This is Mike and his wife playing video games in chronological order of the story, not in order of the release of the game. It's been a little while because of all the things going on since they've done a new video, but that's okay. There's old videos to watch. It's still fun to watch Mike be a terrible video game player. This is why I don't record myself, by the way, playing video games, because I am not that good at them. So I did recently just play like the most recent Halo game, the first like level or so of it. And, I was doing great until my wife woke up from a nap and was watching me. And then I got my ass handed to me and I fell and died. I was able to finish the level, but still a lot better when people aren't watching me, because I'm not that good. And then Mike's other page that he does by himself, Ruling Note Music. This is Mike just talking about all things music related. Check those out too. Subscribe to both of those, because again, why not? We want to hear more of Mike, right? Maybe you don't. Still subscribe. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we will be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.